Aspiring female leaders have to deal with self-doubt, overcoming perceptions, and taking control of their careers. You'll hear from fundraiser extraordinaire, speaker, and author Jenny Mitchell how she has researched pillars that consistently play a role in the leadership journey of women on this episode of Making Our World Better.
Welcome to the Making Our World Better podcast, where you will find motivation and encouragement through lively conversations with inspirational people who every day are making our world a better place. Now, here's your host, Jay Clark.
Welcome to the podcast. I am Jay Clark, and I'm super excited to have a conversation with Jenny Mitchell, a certified fundraising expert and founder of Chavender, a firm that helps nonprofit leaders across Canada and the U.S. to achieve their fundraising goals through personalized fundraising coaching and training. Jenny also just released her new book, Embracing Ambition, Empowering Women to Step Out, Be Seen, and Lead, which unites 12 exceptional women leaders with one common goal, to share their leadership stories as a mentorship resource for the next generation of women leaders. From nonprofit pioneers to corporate strategists, from entrepreneurs to educators, the book illuminates women whose experiences represent a diverse cross-section of industries and roles. And anybody who knows me knows I'm a proud husband and girl dad, so promoting and elevating strong female leaders is really a passion of mine. I can't wait to get into all of this and learn from Jenny's research and expertise and experience. So Jenny, welcome and thanks for being with me.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure here to have this conversation, Jay.
Well, and I'd love to kind of start with your story.
Yeah.
You know, how a classical pianist transforms into a fundraising and leadership coach who transforms into an author of this great book, Empowering Women.
Yeah. Well, it's okay. So put your seatbelts on, folks, listeners. It's a bit of a journey. You know, I would actually go back to the very beginning where I remember myself being a little kid in the backseat of the car and watching all the cars go by on the highway and thinking, oh my gosh, the world is a massive place. And oh my gosh, I hope I have enough time to meet them all. So, Jay, you would relate to that. We were having a conversation beforehand about how fun it is to connect with different people. Yep. So fast forward, I had talents in music and I was a very sensitive kid, probably thoughtful, disciplined. And I spent a lot of time in classical music. I completed a doctorate degree in piano performance from the State University of New York. For those of you that know the music world, that's just outside of New York City. And I lived and worked there for 11 years. You know, I consider those some really formative years. So while I'm Canadian, I have a soft spot for the States and for the people of the States. I always say to my Canadian friends, I learned how to hustle. I learned how to be bold. I learned how to live large. I find those are some of the things I learned from New York City. So then after all those degrees, life happens and babies happen. And along the way, I started raising money for the pianos at the conservatory where I was working, Jay. So that's the connection. I literally, like many of us, I fell into it. And I remember that first meeting, Jay, you know, the first committee meeting where we're raising money for the pianos. And I have this moment where I realize, oh my gosh, we're like doing this, like we're doing it together. And then the parts are the success that we're going to have is greater than the pieces that we are. And that's that whole idea of making the world a better place, right? That was kind of, I was hooked, full stop. And if I can finish the next part, which is, I fell into fundraising. I got hooked. I think my strengths were always major gifts. I did consulting. And at somewhere along the way, Jay, I realized that I needed to access the senior leadership suite in order to make the change happen culturally that needed to happen. So that's where the executive coaching came in. And that's where I am like a pig in mud right now, just loving being in that place to help people grow, because when the people grow, the world gets better and this fundraising success happens. So there you go. That's a long answer, but it's twisted and lovely at the same time. Well,
I love it. It always comes back to leadership, right? I mean, that's where success always is rooted. So I'd love to talk about a little bit about the journey of writing this book. And can you kind of talk about the pillars that play a constant role in the leadership journey, especially women, that you may have discovered in the process?
Yeah. So for your listeners, full disclosure, this book, I've been thinking about this book forever. Like 8 years. Yeah. And I think it's probably because I was an academic, right? So as an academic, the pinnacle of your career is publishing. But every time I kept going at it, writing a book about me, I kept thinking, well, first of all, that's really boring. Like, you're wired like me, Jay. Like, talk to myself, or, you know. And then the second part was, but that's only my perspective. How could I bring more perspective to it, and how could I make it more fun? And so that's really the kernel of this collaborative book. And I really want people to understand that we wrote this book together. There are 12 women CEOs from different walks of life, many of whom are not-for-profit leaders, who came together on a weekend. We brainstormed, we story practiced, I'll call it, where we were in groups of three and we would share our leadership experiences. The book, Jay, has these sort of formative heat experiences that are described in it. So it's not sort of, I was born in 1924, da, 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 da. It's very in the moment. And through that experience, that was March, a year ago exactly almost, May, the stories were due, but we worked intimately with an editor who really helped us craft, like, this was a storytelling exercise. And then, you know, editing, who knew editing took so long? Had no idea. Publishing, it's published by Mimbrus Press. That was in the fall. And then finally the book launch in March of 2024. So that's kind of the book part. It's a big one.
Yeah, that's great. Well, you know, sadly, I think, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, I think there's still kind of this glass ceiling, especially for women. So it had to be fascinating to get perspectives from women who have kind of broken through it. You know, so how did you learn that they kind of overcame these internal and external perceptions of themselves and how they might not really, you know, be C-suite material.
So you just tagged in, even in that little description, a couple of the pillars. So let me tease them out. So we've heard the term glass ceiling, but you may not know the term glass cliff assignments. So this is a new term that's coming up, and it's pretty cool. It's this idea that women, and I just want to highlight too, our visible minorities, our BIPOC women, they're even more disposed to being hired into these last chance roles, right? So nobody else would touch it and they take it on. So that glass cliff assignment is when basically there's something that's doomed. It might be the mission, it might be the finances. It's almost like a last Hail Mary. And they wake up in the role and realize, oh my gosh, you know, I'm managing a ship like the Titanic that's going down. And I think there's two kind of, each one of the pillars has kind of a takeaway. And the whole point of the pillars was, if we can identify them, Jay, we can know when they happen and we can prepare differently.
Right.
I don't think, well, we'll see. I shouldn't say in my lifetime, but, you know, I'd like to think that these will not exist in my children's lifetime, my kids' lifetime, my girls' lifetime. But when you get into a glass cliff assignment, it's like, okay, acknowledging what it is, understanding the pieces, and then making a decision, a conscious decision. You know, there's lots of great opportunities there, and people really learn from it. So that's one of the pillars. I want to pick up on perception barriers, because you just talked about this too. Some people call it imposter syndrome, Jay. I like to think of it as perception barriers. And there's two parts. One is the internal. Am I ready for this?
Right.
And, you know, all of us know, regardless of whether we're a guy or a girl, I'm sure we all have that little bit of that internal dialogue. Is now the time, you know, is this the step I want to take? I'm stepping away from something that's comfortable. So that internal, managing the internal monologue and having great confidence around you to troubleshoot. And then the second part of perception is people not seeing you as a leader.
Yeah.
I think that's the harder one. And for my young folks out there, you know, I've worked with some 32-year-old leaders that are managing multiple million dollar portfolios and still struggle to not be dismissed, to not be ignored, or to say, well, you're too young, or patience grasshopper. And so managing those two, there's some techniques that help. But what I've found more than anything is normalizing the experience, talking about it, having a space to kind of unpack it and put it back together has helped these women immensely. These were the leadership women, but has helped the emerging leaders immensely to kind of process and get over it.
Right. I love it. So talk about how you learned how women in these leadership roles you know, they can often place their value in the hands of others. And, you know, this is something that, you know, I've done. I don't know that any leader that hasn't fallen kind of into this trap. But, you know, how can you kind of take back that control?
Yeah, that is the golden question, right? So I think from a society perspective, there are some differences between men and women. And I use those terms, you know, I just want to be inclusive of all genders, but I just right. want to sort of traditional. And, you know, our biology is actually different, right? The way we're wired in our brain, mm-hmm. the neuroscience. Right. So, and if you look of the traditional paths, at least in my lifetime, you know, women were sort of expected it's the tall poppy syndrome, right? You don't want to stick out. Mm-hmm. You want to conform. Uh-huh. There's a little bit of wait your turn and you'll be rewarded. And anything outside of that norm is sort of perceived as bossy or is perceived as uppity, or mm-hmm. I've been told my biggest fear would be you're too big for your britches. Right. Sidebar, imagine publishing a book and see how that feels on the inside. Like there's a whole bunch there. And for whatever reason, I don't think men have it as much. That being said, I've been having some great conversations with some men who have said, no, I can relate to this too. So how do you avoid having your career wrapped up in somebody else's hands? Mm-hmm. And I think part one is a little bit like how you manage your own money. No one will take care of you better than you will. And so like money, you don't hand off your money to someone without an active participation. You don't hand off your career to someone without active participation.
Love that.
Right? And then the second part is that people are allowed to change, great, Jay. Like they may have made this promise with the best of intentions, but when leadership above them changes or their career changes or they change sites, and they can't honor those promises, that's unfortunate, but it is also life. So I guess the if I was to be as direct as possible, you know, people don't take away your power.
Right.
You give it away. Mm-hmm. And so knowing that now, how might you position yourself differently? And how can you sister and spider yourself into the organization so that you're not just visible to one person? I think that's a huge takeaway.
Yeah. That's such great advice. And, you know, it reminds me, we're such big Swifties in our house. You know, one of my favorite songs of her that's most compelling is The Man. And it talks all about how, you know, if she were a man, she wouldn't be, you know, she wouldn't be vilified for being ambitious and everything else. And, you know, so how can female leaders kind of reclaim the word ambition? So it's not a dirty word. You know, I wish that was more prevalent that.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, you know, as a dad, wouldn't you be excited if your kids came home and said, you know, Dad, I want to be ambitious in my life. Like, wouldn't you just like sing from the rooftops, right?
Right. Yeah. You know, and my girls have, which has been great, but I've seen how hard it is for them, especially, you know, I've got one who's an engineer in a male dominated field. And it's just the story she tells. It's like, you know, the guy sitting across from her never has to deal with that kind of stuff. It's frustrating to deal with. So how can they reclaim that?
Yeah, I think that there's a couple of pieces. I think how women speak about ambition has to be tempered. So an example would be, you know, you go to a conference and a man shows up and says, I did this, 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 and this, and this, and this, and this, and everybody sits rapt listening. Again, I'm simplifying and generalizing, Jay, but they just own the podium and such. In my experience with women, just because if you want to be effective, you work within the structures that you have, right? In a perfect world, we do the same, right?
Great advice right there. Stop and put a pin in that for a second.
Right? Like if you want to be effective, like do it in a way that gets your message across. At least for me, that's most important. Yep. So when you go up to the podium, you say something like, in my 25 years of experience, or in my 15 years leading progressively senior roles across this is what I have found. So you're leaning into your gravitas, your experience, and not your sort of, I don't want to say brassy or charisma, but right. Women seem to need to root themselves in their best practice more than men do. And that actually messages, we have research that says that messages much, much better, Jay. I think the other, I'm going to talk about ambition again. How women see the word ambition is also different. So, you know, I think about sports. My girls played ringette, which your listeners won't know what it is, but it's hockey with a stick and a ring. It's a Canadian thing. Okay. And it was developed for women's sports. And one of the interesting things about ringette is that you must have a female on the bench. That's one of the rules. So what we found is that the dads are jumping at the bit to coach, and yet the women need to be invited to coach. So the reminder of not sitting back on your heels, ambition can also be, can you let me know when this opportunity is going to come up in a very graceful way, right? Not a brassy right. way. And as a woman leader, giving nudges, inviting people, reminding people they can apply. I remember one time at a conference, one of the most powerful things a girlfriend of mine did, a leader friend of mine did, was she said, hey, there's so-and-so, he's CEO of XYZ company. Why don't you go sit beside him? It never would have crossed my mind, Jay, right. I'll be honest. And then finally is, if you are in a position of leadership, making sure you're allying those voices around the table. Oh, Susan, I bet you'd have something interesting to say about that. Oh, Bob, one sec. I just wanted to hear what Susan had to say. Or Susan, was that something similar that we talked about last week? Right. So that allyship. And for gosh sakes, let's celebrate. We have a bad habit, Jay, women, of ripping each other down too. Yep. I think that has to be said. Yeah. And so I think we have to remember that elevating one woman is elevating every woman. And please, 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 can we not gossip? Can we not, tear people down and instead raise them up? That's my final wish. And I do that. I try and do that every day. It's very important to me.
I love it. Such great advice. And, you know, we touched on this a little bit, but I think one of the things that emerging leaders struggle with a lot is, you know, this imposter syndrome or this doubt. So yeah. You know, can you provide some tips yeah. or reframing about how yeah. people can really, yeah. you know, change their relationship with self-doubt? And I'm Ooh. Interested in this myself because I struggle. Yeah. It's a lot.
Yeah, I know. I know the voices are big, eh? The voices are loud. So I have to give Tara Moore credit for this one because it changed my world, I have to say. She's an author that writes on this subject, and she talked about changing your relationship with self-doubt. So in other words, rather than assuming that people are successful don't have it, because I think that's what we assume.
Right.
Acknowledge that. Change your relationship with the self-doubt, that the self-doubt is there, Jay, to protect you and to warn you of dangers, because that's the way our brains worked. Mm-hmm. But make the conscious choice of thanks so much, but I'm going to do it anyway. And I'm going to try it. I have used words. I've coached myself into saying, well, it's just a pilot project. I've coached myself into saying, this is a one time. I don't have to do this again. I've coached myself to say, what am I learning from this experience rather than how could I be harmed or how can I be shown out? So I think softening, remembering that self-doubt is part of us. I sound like a therapist, but it's true. Self-doubt is part of us, right. but it doesn't have to define us. And I think, you know, if you're looking to do things that are outside your comfort zone, you're going to have to invest your time and energy into getting your mindset clear. I mean, isn't that what we admire about entrepreneurs, right. Jay? Mm-hmm. They just have this incredible faith yeah. in the future. But yeah. it is cultivated, I think, is the message.
Well, I think another great message I take from that is that if you do have this self-doubt, you're not the only one. I mean, I remember it was fascinating when I talked to a gal named Michelle Kern, who was the first female captain of the U.S. Thunderbirds. I mean, we're talking wow. the 1% of the 1% of the 1% of fighter pilots in the world. And she's yeah. right there. And she talked about how every day she had to struggle. She struggled with yeah. imposter syndrome, but yeah. learned to overcome it. So it's like I'm sitting there going, yeah. OK, so somebody who's at that high of a pinnacle mm-hmm. is still mm-hmm. suffering from this. We all are. And we can all kind of figure out how to deal with it. So, yeah. you know, yeah. what are some of I'd love to hear about what are some of the most important or interesting things you've kind of learned about human behavior through your work and through this writing this book?
Yeah. Oh, there's actually a terribly broad question,
but
you know, I love this conversation, and I think it's a great question because I think I'm still processing, to be honest. I would say that 3 years ago I took on a journey. I had I know we're both not-for-profit consultants, and I was very comfortable there, Jay, and thought I was doing good work. One of my catchphrases is, you know, Chavender helps people do more good in the world. So you and I are cut from the same cloth.
Love it.
And I always believed in the people. I think the shift I've made is from the work to the people. Like, I thought the fundraising was the thing, and now I've decided it's the people who can do the fundraising. We are not alone. I think that's the first thing I really realize is these stories that I thought were very, very, I don't use the word shame, but I was embarrassed about, or I didn't want to uncover, or every time I have said something vulnerable, you know, like I'm now getting more comfortable saying, you know, I struggle with anxiety. And for many people from the outside, they might not see that with me, but I'm shiny. I have my face everywhere.
Yeah.
Every single time I have said that, somebody else has come up and said, me too. So the stories in the book
instantly creates a connection.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And we set these high pillars. So that's one thing I've realized. The second thing I've realized is, you know, I think it's a curse of smart women, and I'm still unpacking this one, that they work with their heads and not their hearts and their bodies and their brain. Like they focus, I'm holding my hand under my chin here. Mm-hmm. They think they can think their way out of a problem, or they think they can think their way out of a situation. And what I'm realizing at my age now is I was cut off from my body for so long. And keep in mind, I was a sports person. I did classical music. Like I used to know my body really well.
Oh, that soul.
Yeah, you get that, right? And suddenly along the way, I forgot how to breathe. I realized that my parasympathetic nervous system, that's the one that helps you breathe and sends positive hormones. It was frozen. Like I'm seeing you nodding, so I'm guessing this relates. Does this relate? Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. You know, and the opposite is the sympathetic nervous system, which is full of the nerves and they get it right and don't screw up, and you know, the sweat glands. Mm-hmm. And I was so busy thinking that I wasn't feeling. And I am not alone. In the book, I talk about panic attacks. That's something that happened to me. And you know, a sidebar, we don't actually know where panic attacks come from in the end. Like the research is very mixed on them. We know they're tied to body. We also know they're tied to brain. So one of the takeaways for me was the brain is a very powerful instrument, and you must honor and respect it and leverage it. So, you know, the structure of throwing yourself at your calendar and jumping from meeting to meeting. And remember when we were in the pandemic and you come out of it and you're just this total brain fog and you had nothing in the tank, even to cook dinner. That is not sustainable. It doesn't serve your mission. I mean, I'm a broken record. We all know this, but actually seeing the research, the neurological research of why it's not effective, I'm a total convert. I still struggle with I'm addicted to work. Gonna own it.
Yep.
Right? We're entrepreneurs. I love it. It's like every email has a new thing in it, right, Jay?
Yep.
But I am consciously monitoring my body now, as well as my brain and my energy. And that, I mean, just writing and publishing this book and having that on top of everything else. And I'm a pretty, high achiever person, right? I know how to hit deadlines and stuff, but this was a new level. And then watching the leaders who were whole and fulfilled and effective, and seeing the kind of energy they projected versus watching the leaders that were working from a place of scarcity, who were fighting everything, who had toxic workplaces. Like, I did not want to be the person that talked about toxic workplaces. That was my biggest fear, actually, with this book was, you know, somebody said to me way back when, you should write a book about toxic workplaces. I'm like, I don't want to talk about that.
No thanks.
Yeah, those are some of my takeaways. I think they'll continue, Jay.
I'm sure.
I think the lifelong journey of getting more out of people, out of your teams for their sake, not just for your sake. There's a legacy piece there that I'm quite excited to explore, that I'm just embarking on.
Well, and again, that to me, that's what leadership is. Leadership, you're there to serve the people that you're working with. So many great lessons. I can't wait to go back and re-listen to this and take some great notes. So what is it that really has got you excited about the future and really keeps you going on this path?
Yeah, I love that question. I had this idea, this inkling. So I'm getting much better at following my gut and my intuition. I'm really trying to get back to that. And just for our listeners, it's a daily struggle. Like I started 5 years ago being like, I don't know what I like. I don't know what I want. I don't know what makes me happy. Like I've been taking care of kids for 18 years, right? It's like what's on the dinner table. And what gets me really excited, I think, you know, Chavender has now evolved into more of a talent development company. So we serve emerging leaders and leaders in the C-suite. We serve them where they're at. The way we do it is through one-on-one coaching as well as group coaching. I'm a huge believer in peer coaching, mentorship. We develop mentorship programs. I'm seeing what gets me excited is I think people are starting to realize the power of this kind of work. You know, there was a long time, especially not-for-profit, where I was like, executive coaching, does that have a return on investment? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
And overhead. Overhead.
Yeah. And I'm seeing a shift there, which gets me really excited.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm seeing that, you know, and I look at myself, the coaching I've invested in for myself and how much faster, more efficiently I've gotten to where I wanted to go. Was it scary? Yeah. Definitely. We could talk about money mindset and all that stuff.
Right.
But what gets me excited is that there's real hope there. And as a closer, I would say that I was never meant to be in a practice room by myself practicing solo piano. Like light bulb moment. I don't know what I was thinking, Jay. I always love chamber music. And Chavender was established in a lot of ways for me to have amazing staff meetings, to have great people around me. And I am walking the path and bringing the team along with me. And I don't mean that in like an obnoxious way. I mean it in a, we could do this better. Like that's a kind of a core phrase of mine too, is like, okay, I figured that out. How can we do it better? And it's not for lack of, it's not a perfectionist thing. It's that if we can free up our time, we can spend more time in the creative. And that's the place I think that gets me excited for 2024. I did a pottery class for the first time last year. I took a printmaking class. This is kind of going back to my classical music roots in a different way. I have this inkling, so maybe you hold me accountable. I want to learn how to play the accordion.
All right.
So it gives me hope for the people. I always find the people give me hope. The TV and the Globe and Mail and the New York Times and news does not give me hope.
No.
politics does not give me hope. But when I meet people on an individual level and in a team level of doing great work, it really does inspire me to hunker down and do a little bit more.
Well, I love all of that because I think every leader could benefit from asking that question. How can we do it better? Because when you do that, ultimately, it's making you serve better and create and better situations for all the people that you're around. So I love all of that. So what is something you will read, listen to, or watch today?
Ooh, I am obsessed with a French-Canadian TV show on Netflix called Finding B, or Au Secours B in French. You can find it, and it's about an ER doctor, high-performing ER doctor, who is having panic attacks, ironically, and she's seeing a therapist, and it's the unfolding of that. I'll hold it there.
Very cool. So can you talk about somebody, this is a tough one, but can you talk about somebody who's really been a role model for you in the work you've done with Chavender or putting your book together?
Wow. There are so many, but I'm actually going to go a little left field with this. I'm going to say Malcolm Gladwell. So you might know him as the author of The Tipping Point or David and Goliath. He has a great podcast. Yeah. Bomber Mafia, right? And what I like about him is the way he's able to spark dialogue, create dissent. I think he does a great job of dissenting opinions and yet entertaining and fun and thought provoking. So if I'm actually about to write a letter to Malcolm Gladwell to share my book with him, and maybe this is the nudge I need, but I think meaningful conversations is what he what he ascribes to.
Lastly, most importantly, if people want to learn more about your work, pick up your book, get in touch with you, what's the best way to find you and to find your book?
You bet. So maybe, Jay, I'll have you send a link. I'll send a link to access the purchase the book. You can go to chavender.com. And there's a chavender.com that's spelled lavender, but with a CH at the beginning. And you can look across the top for book. I was going to spell book. It's not so funny. B-O-O-K. So that's probably the easiest thing. I'm also on LinkedIn. There's a lot of Jenny Mitchells. J-E-N-N-Y. If you look for Chavender, you'll find me there. And I also have a podcast. So if you're a podcast listener, it's called, you'll like this, the Underdog Leadership Podcast.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. And it's all about helping number twos become number ones in life and work. So those are probably the three best ways to get a hold of me, Jay.
That's fantastic. And I lied. I have one more. You have to explain the word Chavender.
Happy to. So Chavender is a fish. It's a colloquial term for a fish that lives on the east coast of Canada and between like Boston and let's call it Halifax. And this fish, often called a chub, is incredibly adaptable. So it can live in salt water, fresh water. You can imagine the waters from the Great Lakes coming in as well as the salt water. It can manage if it's the water's deep or shallow, and it actually manages temperature changes really well. And when I heard about this fish, I was like, oh my gosh, this is the perfect analogy for not-for-profits. We continue to survive.
That's fantastic. Well, Jenny, this has been wonderfully inspiring. I can't wait to get into your book. I'll make sure to put all that in the show notes. I wish you continued success. Can't wait for your next one, and good luck.
Thank you, Jay.
Thanks for listening, and thanks to Jenny for sharing the insights she's learned firsthand about being a female leader. This podcast has been brought to you by JC Charity Services. Running a nonprofit is hard, and I'd love to bolster your efforts and make you thrive. You can find me at makingourworldbetter.com. To learn more about Jenny and to order a copy of her book, Embracing Ambition, Empowering Women to Step Out, Be Seen, and Lead, visit chavender.com, Chavender like lavender, and check out the show notes for links. If you enjoyed this podcast, please share it with a friend. Until next time, I hope you're inspired to find a way to make our world better.